Well, good morning and welcome everyone to Live Dharma Sunday for July 6th, 2014. Koyo Kubose here, so very glad you joined us. Even though here in Central California, we are having a little heat wave, triple digits, 100 and 304, even 106 in the valley. We're a little bit cooler, 3-4 degrees cooler up in the foothills where we are. But hot is hot. And every morning I water the plants on our back patio. You know, watering plants, nurturing nature, there's something, I guess, what would you call it? Soothing or doing something that's needed, that's very fulfilling at some level, maybe, you know, subconscious level. And you can soak them up good because by the time the afternoon heat comes, they're going to get dried out, you know. And you can't soak them up, keep them watered, keep them moist all the time. The roots can drown, too, if you put too much water constantly. It has to sort of dry out, and then the cycle starts over again. Gets real moist, get gradually drier, you know. And in my orchard area, I give it a good soaking, maybe twice a week. Not every day like the patio plants. The ones that are planted in the ground, and they have a lot of mulch on them, they just need a good soaking once in a while. Not every day. You know, then the roots can go very deep. You water them every day, then the roots will stay close to the surface of the ground. Not as healthy. I sound like I know what I'm doing, even though I'm a city boy. I'm trying to build up this orchard area, and this spring I bought a couple of fig trees, about 5 feet high in a pot. And I bought 4 different cherry trees. Ooh, optimistic. And I bought nashi, which in Japanese is translated usually as an Asian pear, apple pear. It's brown in color, shaped like an apple, but it's crunchy and has a little bit of a pear taste. But it's not, doesn't get soft like a regular pear, but it's crunchy with a pear taste, but like an apple. Very unique. Ooh, I like nashi. And so come after the hot summer, come around September, October, I'm going to transplant these fruit trees into my orchard area. And then they'll have about a month or so to get their roots good in the ground, prepare for winter. That's my plan. I didn't want to plant them in the summer when then the heat will be too much of a transplant shock. Okay. So, and in the same way, you know, all the deciduous trees lose their leaves for the winter and go into hibernation, and so that their roots could go down. And in the same way, I think people, it's good to cut your hair off, sort of, or your vanity, so that your roots can go deep. Well, I'm rambling on. I'm going to move on to our guest, Dharma Glimpser. She is a bright Dong Lay minister, and in 2010, part of LM3 group. And I remember during the induction, when they were sitting out at the altar rock here in Coarse Gold at bright dawn, and lit, and we have a couple of red-tailed hawks that have a nest in a tall pine tree on our property, and one of the hawks was flying, came flying overhead during the ceremony, and she said, afterwards, she told me that she sort of teared up when she saw that hawk because she felt that it was Reverend Gyome Kubose coming to see what was going on and paying a visit and being a participant at the induction ceremony. Well, her name is, she's got a long name. Her given name was Stacy and then family name Burkhart. And then she got the name Nico, which, because she was a yoga instructor, massage therapist, she gave a lot of yoga classes, a lot of stretching, that her family nicknamed her for Cat Denise, which is Nieko, but they mispronounced it and it became Nico. So she became known as Nico. And then when she got her Tisarana Buddhist confirmation from me, I named her Cat Son. You know, everyone gets the Yo, or the second character in the Dharma name, for the bright dawn, or the, you know, the sun. And the first character with Byo is what the Sino Japanese pronunciation for cat. So she's a cat son. Or you could have an image of a cat stretching out in the sun, how to be relaxed, and yet could spring into action any time. There's ways in which you could apply that, the image of one's Dharma name, in very creative ways to make it a teaching for oneself. Okay. How does a cat son give us some Dharma teachings? So she's known as Nico Byoyo Stacy Burkhart. And she lives in Illinois. I first met her in Hawaii when she was giving a yoga demonstration at a Buddhist conference. She was helping out. And for all of us aging seniors, she would give a morning stretching yoga exercises for the conference participants. And she had a yoga center on the Big Island later. And later she moved to Texas, and then later she moved, started to decide to go back to school to follow a passion of studying music. And she can compose. And in fact, the intro music that you heard at the beginning of the show is her original composition, and it is our Bright Dawn theme song. Well, well, well. Very, very good. For today's Dharma Glimpse, I will call on Nico Byoyo Stacy Burkhart.
And here is my Dharma Glimpse for today. I've been thinking a lot lately about how our perceptions influence our life. Having some experiences where you get to hear someone else's version of a conversation that you've had with them can be an eye-opener. Sometimes the thing that you remember the most about what they said is the thing they don't even recall saying. One thing is for sure. Our preconceived notions about the things, about what the things we say really mean can vary greatly from person to person. It really depends on a person's background, cultural upbringing, and life experiences to determine how they interpret communication. We often see this as the case when two people from a different part of the world try to communicate. it can be easy to get mixed up about communication signals and cross-cultural interaction. The truth is, it can be just as easy to have this kind of misunderstanding with friends, family, or even your spouse. When we want to learn how to better communicate in a foreign culture, to learn about the history of that culture and understand what the subtle cues in body language are, we have to learn a new language and practice it frequently. All of these things will lead to a better communication experience with other cultures. Sometimes we have to understand that our friends, family, and spouses have their own culture and language we must interpret. Two people who have been living together for years can sit down and talk about an issue and discover that they have entirely different perceptions about that issue. It's dangerous to assume that just because you see something a certain way, that those around you also see it that way. Learning to communicate with others, especially those close to us, is important. I've learned that the best way to handle a miscommunication is to be patient and refrain from reacting until you have discovered exactly what the other person meant. Assuming what they meant based on your own communication filter may result in unnecessary stress and conflict. Greater compassion and understanding between family and friends. I imagine that if everybody on the planet did this, we could have world peace. Thank you for listening to my Dharma Glimpse.
You know, talk about selective listening and perception. Importance of context in communication. You know, you may feel like you're saying something very clearly, but you might be on mute in a certain sense of the word. This is what I think right understanding is all about in the first of the Eightfold Noble Path. You know, right understanding means being broader than your own self-centered, we're always self-centered, but a certain filter, personal filter, I guess, of what we take in from the world. And then when it's a conversation or listening, you know, it's only natural that we look at it from the only way we can. And that's what all about with politics, education, communication is all about. And usually we share the same broad societal filter until we come into cross-cultural interaction, of course. But we do get into trouble in subtle ways, but impactful ways, when there's slight differences. So we always should have that assumption involved. And that's why communicators always say, when you're talking, and especially when you're maybe discussing something, like an issue, to restate what you heard. So, what you're saying is da 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 da. They'll say no, or they may say yes. Okay. And I think this could be an eye-opener. And sometimes the person themselves, the speaker, when they hear back what they said, no, I could see where you would get that impression. That's how I stated it. But actually, I want to clarify some of the, or what they call connotations of what was said, some of the emotional undertones, you know. And I think that's why when you talk to someone in person, it's different than if you read something. Sometimes it's good to express yourself in writing, you know, as opposed to speaking to a person. I'm sure there's trade-offs. But usually it's better to talk to the person, because then they can hear your intonation, they can see your body language, they can see your facial expression, and it conveys more of the meaning behind what you're saying. And I think I have a tendency, I don't know why, no use trying to delve into why a person talks the way they do. being a minister's son, minister's family, I remember one time I took a public speaking course in college, and we had to, of course, give a presentation, and then the teacher gave a little private interview and evaluation to each of us. And when the teacher was talking to me, he said, you know, what is your family like and so forth, and he found out that I was a minister's son, and he said, maybe that's why you're kind of shy in public speaking, because when you have a parent who's very articulate, you know, like a minister who gives a lot of talks and so forth, the children tend to be not as assertive in their speech. And I said, oh, I said to myself, well, gee, I never thought about these kind of things. And I guess I was a kind of a shy person. But then when I went into education and I had to start giving, you know, lectures in class, I was forced to become a public speaker. And it was a tremendously good training, I guess. Then after I became a minister, of course, and you can't shut up. Occupational hazard of being a minister. Always talking. But in any case, the point I wanted to make was parent and as a spouse and as a person, I started to talk loud. I wanted to kind of communicate what I felt and what I meant. And you start talking loud. You don't mean to sound rough. When you talk loud, it sounds kind of rough, imposing. But when you want to really try to communicate, and maybe this is part of being self-centered, you say, this is what I mean. Don't you understand what I mean? I really mean it. You know? I have a hard time getting over that. And like we had a little family game sort of that to give feedback to each other, that whenever I talk like that, that my boys were supposed to say MT, which was an acronym for mean talk. You sound mean. And I welcome this kind of feedback when they say MT, Dad. I say, oh, you know. So it helped a little bit. But I'm still too loud. Then I think about certain people, leaders, chairman of the boards, powerful people who speak softly. Or maybe like Theodore Roosevelt said, speak softly but carry a big stick. In some contexts, I know I speak softly. People have said so, you know, when I'm among more strangers, I guess. But I know that there was a person, I think he was chairman of the Chicago Bears in particular, McCaskey. And he was trained at Harvard. He was a lawyer, Harvard Law School. And I guess it was kind of a stereotype, but they said that people from Harvard, they talk very softly. Because they knew that they were good and powerful and effective leaders. And so and it was sort of a technique, though, because when you speak softly, other people have to be very attentive and listen to you, you know. And since you have an important position, they want to hear what you have to say. So I thought, gee, I should speak softly. But I have a hard time. Yet, I think this is part of maybe right speech. And part of one's own practice, one does not have to always impose oneself in a forceful way. Okay? And if you could overcome this, if I could overcome this a little bit, I think it's the kind of thing that spreads out. And you become more gentle in the manner in which you conduct yourself. And I think each of us has a particular personality trait that we find that we're trying to always work on, you know. And in a way, it's good that one never feels that one achieved that goal completely, entirely, in all situations, at all times. One should always be striving to improve and to do, you know, never to arrive. One should never be able to say, I'm a kind person. Of course you want to be a kinder person, kinder. But it would be a big mistake if one said, yes, I worked on it, I became a kind person. Okay. You could be seen as the most kind person in the world by others. But inside, you know, you still have a long way to go. And I thought it was tremendously insightful when someone asked Mother Teresa, who's probably the epitome of compassion in her work, in her whole life, asked her, how did you become so, you know, involved in such compassionate work? And her answer was, because I know I have the devil inside of me. You know, that's the irony, or the secret, if you want to call it like that, of a spiritual life. You know, because the most powerful way that we sabotage ourselves, our spirituality, is when we, if we praise ourselves too much in our spiritual materialism. Oh, I becoming a kind, gentle, you know, compassionate person. Big mistake. You always have to keep going. It's the journey. We never arrive. Well, I'm talking away. That's all for today's broadcast. Till next time, keep going, and you have a very wonderful day. Thank you.